Please note, this episode contains descriptions of child pornography and child trafficking. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to another episode of Trafficked. I cannot wait for you to meet today's guest, Renee Brinkerhoff. Renee, holy moly. Thank you so much for being here. You are such an inspiration in all the ways. Thanks for joining us.
Cheryl, I'm really excited to be here with you. This is fantastic. I'm really looking forward to our talk.
Wow. So you make such a difference in ending sex trafficking and child trafficking in this world. And I can't wait for people to hear about how you do it. So how do you do it? How did you come up with the idea? Do you want to take us back beforehand and tell us the story that way? What do you think sounds best to you?
Yeah, I'll try. Let's do that. So I started racing at 56. Don't have a background in cars, don't have a background in racing. And really it was a have to, not a want to. You know, you find yourself having conversations in your head, and that's what I was doing, but I never heard it. And one day I heard it, and it was one day I'm going to race a car. So when I heard that, I said, oh great, now I got to go do that. And I was just thinking I'd do it one time. But through that whole experience, it changed me. It just turned my life upside down, turned me inside out, and just grew me in these ways that I never imagined, and found out more about who I am and who I'm not. And all these things happened, right? We ended up winning our first year down there in our class, and we made history in this race. It's in Mexico. It's 7 days. It's a La Carrera Panamericana. It's a super dangerous race. I had no idea what I was getting into. But I was going to do it one time, and here I am 8 years later, and we're still racing. So this thing just took over my life, and my family is super supportive, which is awesome. And so through all that, being a woman, being older, being in an old car, doing really well, all those kind of weird things, when I would tell people what I was doing, they'd look at me and they'd look at me again. And then I realized, gosh, they're listening to me. And I could talk to them about what I care about. And what I was really, at that time, was growing in me was this passion to do something about kids that were being trafficked. So it's all just came together very organically. It wasn't a preconceived idea. And I got introduced to trafficking through a bunch of circumstances, happenstances, we could say. I was sitting next to a couple on a tour bus, and the gentleman told me that he works for the FBI. He's undercover, and he poses as a John, and his job is to find people making, selling, and using child pornography. And he's based in Florida, and he introduced me to this whole thing I had no idea about. And he told me that primarily what he sees is this pornography. What he was dealing with was with very small children, children who were too young to talk and tell their mommy and daddy what was going on. And I was mortified. And of course, who wouldn't be, right? I mean, especially if you're a mother and a human being, for gosh sakes, if that doesn't disturb you, nothing's right. Going to disturb you, right? And then it wasn't long after that, I sat next to a man on a rental bus to pick up a rental car. And I sat down next to him, he just glanced over, and he had his phone, and I saw on his phone an image of a very young child. It was a pornographic image. And I just thought, okay, this is knocking on my door. I need to be doing something about this. And that's how it all started. I mean, we've always cared about giving and helping people, but this really focused everything into doing something for kids that are being trafficked. And that's how we're here. I mean, that's what we're doing and how we got here.
So here you were, you weren't an expert in cars. You'd never been a race car driver. And you said, I'm going to be a race car driver. And now, so people understand, we're not talking about driving around a track here.
No.
The kinds of racing that Renee does is unfathomable. I mean, to look at the images of and videos of what you do, it, like, imagine racing in Antarctica. you have to tell us about. You go to some of the most dangerous races in the world. Would you tell us about these?
So when we decided, so we started Valkyrie Racing and we started Valkyrie Gives, and I don't know if you know what Valkyries are, or I could share that with you.
Yeah, of course, please do.
Okay, so Valkyries are from Norse mythology, and they're women warriors, super brave, and they have compassionate hearts, and they go to the field of battle and they rescue the wounded and the dying that are worthy. They take them back to Valhalla and they restore life. And that's what we've named our company and everything. And because we want to be modern day Valkyries, right? So we said, okay, we've been doing this Mexico race and we've been having success and we have this little voice, but we want a bigger voice. We want to have a bigger impact. What can we do? So we decided we'd take the car and we'd put it in really tough, extreme races, races that never have women in them or never have an old car in them or whatever, right? Just dial it up, make us stand out and go do that. And then because you're such an oddity, they put mics in front of your face and then you tell them why you're doing it, right? And we've done 20,000 miles. I think we've been in 18 countries and we just pick really, like I said, you know, extreme racing, just extreme races and dangerous. Yes, there's danger in them. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, but you know, I enjoy that. I find it thrilling. I find it like, I feel at home and at peace when I'm doing that. It feels right for me. Really weird because I'd never imagined I'd be here today doing any of this. But here I am. I homeschooled my four kids. You know, what did I do every day? I taught my children and I was soccer coach mom and carpool mom. And I did this and I did that. They all went off to college with scholarships. And then now here I'm doing this and it's beyond my imagination. And then to be able to do something about kids that are being trafficked, to be able to help one kid, thank you, Lord. That's a good reason to have life, right? Amen. Just right there.
Yes.
And I don't know. Just ask me whatever, Cheryl. I'll be glad to share.
So, first of all, you talk about your old car. You have to tell us about this car. And I want
to... Okay. It's a 1956, which happens to be the year I was born. How odd is that? That was not intentional. And it's a Porsche and it's a 356 A model. And some people call it the bathtub. It doesn't have any save me features that I, you know, the things like, you know how you, the brakes will save you now and the suspension if you don't turn right or the car talks to you. No, there's none of that stuff, right? It's really very visceral. You hear everything, you feel everything. It's a manual, obviously, right? It's a manual, it's a stick shift. And you know, if you do the right thing, it feels really good. And if you do the wrong thing, it feels really bad. But the car gives you this amazing feedback and the engine's in the back. So it makes it more of a challenge to drive. It's got a roll cage in it. It has a fire extinguisher system in it. It's, you know, it's just totally decked out for racing. And pretty much those things are all required. They're required safety features for these events. You know, you have to have this stuff. They don't want you dying in the car. It happens. The first race I ever did, someone died the first morning. A few days later, people are going off the cliff and cars catching on fire. And so it's a crazy world, but it's my new norm, I guess you could say.
Right. There was an image I saw of an Antarctica race and the way that you'd had your car equipped for this. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it. It's like, it's amazing to see.
Oh gosh. So we decided, you know, we were going to take the car in every continent. Well, Antarctica's one of those, right? So we've, you know, offset our whole carbon footprint. We've planting 20,000 trees and we're using solar cells and biofuel and everything. But we want to bring awareness to Antarctica about child trafficking, because as you know, Cheryl, if they have the internet, kids are being trafficked. And that's happening in every place on the earth, whether it's rural, metropolitan or whatever, right? So we had to make my car suitable for the ice. We're hoping to go this winter, but I think COVID's going to prevent us from going. But the car, you know, the ice, you know, people think, oh, what's the big deal of driving on ice? Well, just like if you're to walk out in a big snowstorm, you're going to sink, right? And you can imagine that the snow and ice is hundreds and hundreds of feet thick, right? So we have to glide along the top of all of this, and you have to make, so we did skis and we did tracks. So the car will have skis and tracks. Then those will come off and we'll put the tires back on, and we're going to try a land speed record to see how fast we can go on the ice. And we're going to camp. We're not doing, this is not a cush trip. This is going to be really rugged. In fact, when I was talking to the man who I'm going with, who actually has the world record for driving to the South Pole 2 times, and he skied it multiple times, I thought I was interviewing him. I found out he was interviewing me, and he said, Renee, you know, I've taken people down here. They've just gotten off the plane, and they tell me they want to go home. So he goes, are you going to want to go home? And are you going to be afraid? Because you are putting your life at risk. This is a very hostile environment. And I said, I'm not afraid. You know, all this racing I do, I make that decision every time, you know, because you're risking life and limb. And I said, I want to go do this, Jason. And so it's going to be amazing. And then, you know, you can have 200 plus mile per hour winds, and temperatures can drop drastically. We're going to camp. We're bringing our own food, sleeping bags, tents, the whole gear. We're putting all that in the little car to support ourselves. And he has to have his gear. I have to have my gear so we can both be self-sufficient and independent, right? Though I definitely will be relying upon him, because he knows that ice and he can look at it and say, no, we don't want to go there. Yes, we do want to go there. Because crevasses are a big problem. You have to tether yourself to the car. Right. So if we have to make a potty stop along the way, I have to bungee myself to my car or tether myself somehow to my car, so that when you step out, you think it's solid and it might not be. So just a safety measure, right? So those are just some of the things that we're going to be encountering down there. And that'll be our final journey of this kind of awareness program. And then we've got another one that we want to do after this, because if we can, you know, the car is such an amazing vehicle, literally, to talk about what we're doing. And so if we can, we want to continue to race and to use that as a platform to raise awareness and give money and all the things that we're doing. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell. Or maybe a big shell.
And I've seen you covered, I mean, from everyone from the New York Times. You're not kidding. When you go out, the press shows up with a microphone. And so how do you help raise awareness? Is it just letting people know that the problem exists, or how it exists, or what to look out for? What do you think is the biggest way that you're raising awareness?
Every opportunity that we get, and some of those you described, they say, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And then we can tell them why. Here's why we're doing it. And then we start talking about child trafficking. And it's so funny, because there are many countries that we've gone in and we talk about it, and they say, no, we don't have that problem here. We were in Russia and we would meet people along the way. And they say, no, we don't have that problem here. And you have to be so respectful, but you say, yeah, we have it in my country, in the United States, and we have it in every country. And we want you to know about it. So you just start talking to them about it. And then the other thing is, we raise money and donate funds. And we try to do that in every country we go to. And we supported, I'm not sure, like 12 or 13 different organizations around the world. We spend a lot of time vetting those organizations to make sure they're, you know, grassroots, boots on the ground people that are passionate, they care about it, they've either been a victim, they've had people in their families touched, or they're in law enforcement and they care about it, or somehow they've been made aware of it and they really care about this cause and that what they're doing is effective. So we've funded people that are doing educational programs, rescue programs, and rehabilitation programs. So whoever we can find that we can get behind and support, we've supported them. And That's what we've done. We've got a whole $1 million fund drive right now, because we've isolated some individuals that really need a lot of help. Instead of just coming one time and helping, they need sustained help, right? For they can rely upon us over a period of years. And Wow, I could talk to you about what we were doing in Peru and what's going on down there. And it's just...
Please, would you share about what's going on down in Peru? Thank you.
Sure. So Madre de Dios is actually one of the most dangerous places in all of Latin America, and it's in the mountains. It's along the border, I think, between Brazil. I'm not sure exactly which country it butts up against, but it's a border area, and there's a lot of illegal mining that goes on. Gold mining, and they're just ravaging the land up there. It's really terrible. But what happens is these guys that are out there, you know, come in, they found gold, right? They go get paid for their gold in the illegal market, and then they just want to have a party for 3 or 4 days, right? So they're in these little villages, and they bring these young girls in there thinking they're getting a job, a real job, like a bona fide, decent job, right? But they're not, and they're being tricked. It's the same story. It happens here, it happens everywhere, right? It's the same story. They go to poor regions and villages, say, we've got job opportunities for you, or they use the internet and they bring people into these remote areas. And one advertisement we saw was so many soles, which equaled about $35 US. You get a bottle of Johnny Walker Red, and we're gonna throw in a really young girl. And that's the offer. That's the deal. And of course, virgins go for more. And so there's this whole cyclical thing going on where the miners go out, they get the gold, they sell the gold, they party, and they keep bringing the young girls in. They just keep cycling them through. And we found this gentleman who works, there are several different offices that fight trafficking in Peru, but their budget literally is about $3,000 a year to carry out operations. They don't provide them with a vehicle. They have to rent the vehicle, pay the driver, buy lunch for the cops that they take up there. They can't tell them why they're going, so they don't alert the people that are going into the area. And that's his budget. And he's literally risked his life. They try to kill him with dynamite, knowing he was, the guys who's he's disrupting their business, right? He's leaving town one day and he gets tipped off because he has all these undercover people that are tipping him off on what's going so he can make arrests, right? They try to blow him up with dynamite. And this guy, they moved him out of that area into Lima, but there's some women now that are running that office. So he's doing that work in Lima. And in Lima, it's a more of a tourist. People come in for sex tourism, right? And of course, it's an underground thing, but of course, it's the pervs are all over the world. They want the youngest kids they can find, boys or girls. So he needs help. He needs more than $3,000 a year for right. a budget. So we're trying to start our NGO down there to help him and support him. And, there's all these different areas that this is happening. And like I said, sometimes it's, sex tourism, and other times it's the story in the mining villages, but we just feel like, what's the life of one child worth? We always say this, right? What's it right. worth? So anything we can do to help, and these doors have opened up for us. It's all sort of come together these last few months, right? All this stuff. And then there's this journalist who we know from having raced there, who knows this guy. And so he's helping, and he's actually done a whole expose of this whole problem. And it was on Al Jazeera TV. And so that's something really, really excited about, seeing if we can support those people and help right. them.
And thank goodness you're getting major media coverage, like Al Jazeera is such a reputable news source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can I ask, Renee, so you, I want to go back to when, you go to Russia, mm-hmm. hypothetically speaking, and they say, oh no, it's not happening here. How do you open someone's eyes to make them understand that yes, in fact, it is, as you say, happening anywhere that there is the internet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first, we were saying, you have to be so respectful because they take such pride in their country, right? And we just say, it's not a problem with your country. It's a problem with humanity, right? And these kind of people are everywhere. And then you just show them, the articles or the online things that you have found, that the raids that are going on in Moscow to find the undercover kids. You just start showing them information and just let them explore and say, you know, and we're here to help and we're here to raise awareness, and it's a global problem, and we're here to support you. And I think you just have to. You know, it's one thing, but if once you become aware, and then you just, that usually tugs on people's heart, and they want to know more, and they learn more. And through that, because it's such a terrible thing, they find ways to become involved. At least you hope they do, right? Find ways to become involved.
Yes. And on that note, the most common question I'm asked is, well, what can I do? How can I help? I'm not a survivor. I don't know any. I don't know. I'm not in legislation or law enforcement. I guess I can't do anything, right? And I say, oh, wrong. But Renee, what would you recommend that people do who are interested in making a difference on this cause and want to end human trafficking, particularly, like you'd said, of children? Well, of anybody.
Yeah, well, sure. Because, right, those children, if they survive, become adults. Right?
Yes.
And this, they don't get out of that life, right? So then there are adults being trafficked. And of course, there's labor trafficking too. So I just say, you know, find out who's doing good work in your community. Find out what's going on in your community. Just talk to your congressman, talk to your local police department. Go online, find out about your, you know, who's involved in the legislature. I've talked to him in my home state. I've talked to all those people, and I've spoke to people in the Attorney General's office. But if you don't want to even spend that much time digging around, just see what's happening and who you can support. And because I would say most of those organizations are doing good work. You know, you always want to know, you want to check their financials and all that. You want to meet with those people, but there's so many opportunities. You can mentor. You can mentor people. That's a wonderful thing. A lot of those people that have been trafficked don't have an education, or they haven't finished high school. If you can help tutor them, you can raise awareness by throwing an event. You can just talk about it. I mean, if you even just talk about it and make people aware, the more people that are aware of it and that they realize it's actually even happening in suburbia, mm-hmm. It's happening with children, with good families, and how they're lured off the internet. There's so many ways just to make people aware that it's not just over there across the sea in some country that's underdeveloped, or, right, we used to call them third world countries. It's not just there, it's here. It's here, and it looks like everything from people from poor backgrounds to wealthy backgrounds, educated, uneducated, and just to be aware and to raise that awareness by talking about it, learn about it, and just talk about it. And, you know, MOPS, Mothers of Preschool Children, you know, volunteer at the school. Is there a program at the school that educates the teens, especially in middle school, about what to be aware of, you know, how for parents to be careful of watching their kids on the internet? There's so many ways. And if you know, we have three things. We have our time, we have our talent, and we have our resources/money of whatever those you can give. You know, some of us can give all three, some of us can only give one. It's just, if you're burdened by this, if you care about it, find, you know, which one of those three, and just go jump in. And I always feel like people think too much in advance. Just get into it, just start doing it, and then you'll figure it out, right? How many things in life do you learn and come to awareness of, or what you should be doing just by getting started, right? Jump into racing, and then what am I doing? You know, and just go through the door. And if that doesn't work, go into another door. And if you can only give $5, give your $5, right? All that stuff adds up. And don't ever belittle any of that. All of that's important. Whatever you can contribute, whatever you can do, all of that's important.
You make it so evident that each one of us truly can make a difference. I think it can be so overwhelming as we start to contend with the enormity of the problem, particularly when you're talking about pre-verbal children, that it can, the contending with the enormity of it can freeze people in their tracks. It seems it's so overwhelmingly huge. What could I do? But you've broken it down into actionable steps. And of course, we'll put the links to Valkyrie Gives so people can also contribute that way as well. But you've taken it from such a big problem down into these actionable steps so that each of us can contribute. And I thank you so much for that. There are so many ways that you're inspiring, and I thank you. And it's I also have to say, the fact that you at 55 started contemplating what I'm thinking about racing and started it at 56. Thank you. Thank you for leading the way. It's, you know, you open eyes in so many levels. I lived in Japan for a while, and they revere their elders in such a way. I remember that having them brought in to big decisions at where I was working. I was a young model, but my agent would bring in her grandparents anytime she had to make a decision of weight. And I thought, I related to my grandparents like that, but I didn't see a lot of that. And there's something about those who have traversed the road. Hell, I'm, you know, one of those myself, you know, but I'm not putting an age to it, but it's you're defying stereotypes. You're defying what we traditionally hold to be true. You're busting myths all around. And I want to acknowledge you for that as well. Thank you for leading the way, showing us one person can make a difference.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, I started to learn to play golf a couple years ago, and I just couldn't, but I enjoy it. Believe me, it's fun. You're outside and you've got this camaraderie, but I can't imagine that's all I would do for the rest of my life. It's like, and for me, it's not until you get older that you actually have some wisdom. A small measure, and hopefully it grows, but to actually really be effective and do things and do them in a really amazing way, a smart way, a wise way, I think it takes older people to do that. I think it's like this whole thought, like you were saying, that when you get old, you know, older, you know, 50s, 60s, you sort of slow down and you're just sitting around reading more and, you know, just like cruising to the end. And it's like, wait a minute, now you're actually in a place where you can actually go do something more than just make money or think about your retirement. And those are all wonderful things. I'm not diminishing that, but you're now equipped and in a place of life that you can go, and especially in a charitable way, affect huge change. You can affect huge change, and you can rally your friends and people. And our biggest supporters financially have been a group of women, about 25 or 30 women that I've had the honor to know, and their friends that have supported what we've done. They and that's why we're doing this whole like global kind of fundraise, because I realized, Renee, and they give me every year, you know, like $60,000 or $70,000, this group of 25, 30 women. And it's amazing. And it's absolutely amazing. But if you want to have more bigger impact, Renee, you got to get out of your comfort zone and just with your girlfriends, and you got to go talk about this, right? But to be able to talk about this, and at this time in life, it's much more meaningful. It's much more impacting. And your voice is so much stronger. And it's really something that women want to rally behind, and young and old. And it's so awesome for me to feel like I have their support, and that they can't go do this right now, but I can do it for them. I can be their boots on the ground. I can be their voice. I can go those places they can't go. And they love that. And I love that. And I feel honored I can. So just don't think about slowing down. Think about just getting that car into the right gear, you know?
Yay. Outstanding. You are so right. Wow.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Renee, thank you. Just truly leading by example. I thank you for showing us ways that we can really change this and stop the problem. All right, my dear. Look forward to watching you continue to race on.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate you having me on your show and being a part of it and having to bring our voices together. This is really great. Thanks a lot.
It's my honor. Thank you. If you or someone you know has been taken for sex trafficking, or you suspect that's happening, call 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233-733. With your help, we can stop human trafficking now. To keep up with all of our latest work, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Trafficked Series. Please be sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to our podcast. And listen to our next episode with survivor Jess Richardson, who is an author, activist, wife, mother, and former sex trafficking victim. Jess shares everything she learned from her pimp. Catch this powerful and impactful story on the next episode of Trafficked. Until then, I am your host, Cheryl Hunter, and we are here to end human trafficking. So remember, if you see something, say something. This is a Conveyor Media production. Host and creator, Cheryl Hunter. Executive producers, Colin Whelan and Rebecca Sermons. Head producer, writer, editor, Celine Beth Calderon. And music by Mickey O'Brien.